And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on The Athletic Podcast Network.
And welcome back. It's another edition of the Hoops Adjacent part of The Athletic NBA Show. David Aldrich here in D.C., where we're trying to see if John Wall's getting traded. It's all good in L.A. with Waz, because everybody loves the moves that the Lakers and the Clippers made. Right, Waz?
I mean, you know what's so crazy? I'm happy we got our guest on today because Nate was a little tepid on the Lakers offseason. I peeped the pod and I was like, that's interesting. Nate not feeling the Lakers.
I want to talk to him about that because I think I know what he was saying, but I think it all depends on what you think of Marc Gasol. I think that's what it comes down to. Frankly, I mean, all due respect to Montrezl Harrell. I think it's about Marc Gasol. If you like Marc Gasol, you think this is a pretty good offseason for them. Anyway, let's bring in Nate Duncan, the longtime Dunked On podcast, which is must listening for any NBA fan who wants real
info. If you're serious
info.
About being an NBA fan, exactly. DA.
Exactly. Because you can be a good fan. You know what I mean? I think Nate's podcast is one for good fans. Because I don't mind you making an argument as long as you have some facts behind you, you know. And Nate provides the facts. Nate, welcome to the show, man. Appreciate you coming.
Awesome, great to be on here, guys.
Let's get right into the Lakers thing, though. What did you not like? What did you think was okay?
So I think they ultimately did improve themselves, and they salvaged it with Gasol. And that's one of the beauties of being the LA Lakers is you, even when you've hard capped yourself by signing Montrezl Harrell, a player who probably doesn't really help you that much, who's probably not closing games for you. Even when you've traded a first round pick for Dennis Schroeder, another guy that they were really buying high on and has some defensive questions, may or may not be in their closing lineup himself, you've used up your two biggest bullets on those guys. Oh, because you're in LA and you're the Lakers, you can just get Marc Gasol for the minimum and you can salvage everything. That's kind of how I viewed their offseason.
Yeah, I think for me, Nate, I looked at the center rotation of last year, which was Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, and obviously AD when it was time to get serious. I think unquestionably that Montrez is better than JaVale McGee. And I think the difference between Howard and Marc Gasol is negligible. If anything, I might think Marc Gasol is a better fit because he can stretch the floor. He gives you the same sort of interior defense. He's probably not as shifty as Dwight Howard, but I don't think Dwight Howard was all that shifty last year anyway. So I just look at it like their big man rotation has been upgraded. And I think Schroeder's way better than Rondo. I just do. Rondo had a nice playoff run. There's no taking that away from him. But I just think Schroeder's a better player than him.
I agree with you. 95% of the time. Your last point first, but Rajon Rondo was unbelievable in the playoffs. I think much to perhaps all of our surprises that the playoff Rondo was back again at what age 34, age 35. He shot the ball extremely well defensively. I thought particularly in that Houston series, he really gave them a lot. He was another connector moving the ball offensively. And so Schroeder, I mean, obviously, if you're trying to win games in the regular season, I feel the Hawks are going to be sorely disappointed by paying $7 million a year to Rondo over the next 2 years, hoping to get playoff Rondo. And, you know, but regular season Rondo was kind of a replacement level of guy. But I think Rondo held up defensively. I don't know if Schroeder can hold up defensively. Like we saw him try to guard James Harden in that OKC series and get rocked every single time. So, I mean, like when you're talking about the regular season and a truncated regular season, Harrell, Schroeder, let him go on that second unit, run pick and roll the way Harrell used to with Lou Williams. And you really got something. They'll be better in the regular season. When it really comes down to winning time though, I would have preferred to focus on players who are really going to be a part of what they're doing at the end when, as you guys noted, AD at center is probably the way they want to go.
The interesting thing to me about what the Lakers have done is that the team that won the NBA championship in pretty convincing fashion, I think we would all agree they were pretty good, has completely discounted the bubble. They're just like, we don't give a damn about the bubble at all. We take nothing from it. Rondo, you can go. Danny Green, you can go. Dwight Howard, you can go. All the people that like balled out for them at various points in Orlando, they're just like, yeah, see you later. We're going to bring some more guys in. It's amazing to me. Like, they just have completely, like, not forgotten. They've just made the decision that what happened in Orlando doesn't really apply to them going forward. It's just interesting to me.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for that approach because, as mentioned, Rondo, you know, he had, what, 4 months off before coming into the bubble and then it was able to look pretty good after that hand injury. And Howard, he was on his absolute best behavior, which he and in unbelievable shape, which he hadn't been. So I do kind of understand not wanting to bet on two 34-year-olds repeating what they did in the bubble, and Danny Green was pretty old also. So I think they did. I understand the approach of maybe wanting to try and get younger and more athletic and also take some of the pressure off of AD and LeBron. I think they did all those things. And they also got Wes Matthews, who hopefully can duplicate what Danny Green gave them last year. They got him at a great price also. But yeah, again, I think I agree with the strategy. I don't necessarily agree with the execution and particularly the Harrell thing. I think the Schroeder thing, that's one where I think it's more defensible. Harrell to me is just, that seems like kind of more like a clutch favor. He didn't have any kind of a market type of thing to me. You'd know better than I would on that one, DA, but it seems like he didn't have any market. He wanted to kind of stick
very quick.
Yeah,
he went real quick. He was one of the early agreements over the weekend. So it seems counterintuitive because you would think if somebody has a market, you'd have you'd be able to sift through three or four offers. You may be right. Maybe the market for him wasn't as big as I thought it would be because he did sign very quickly with the Lakers.
Well, we were thinking it was going to be Charlotte. That seemed like the only real.
Well, they offered him more money, right? So I mean, that was at least what was reported. I think Rick Bunnell reported that, who knows everything down in Charlotte with the Observer. He's very good. They offered him more money. Let me talk to you. Let's talk about Charlotte for a second, because I really want your take on this. I want both of your thoughts on the Hayward signing. This is what I think. I think Charlotte, of course, it's an overpay. What else is Charlotte going to do to get good players down there? Nobody is going to go. There was no chance they would get anybody in the free agent class next year. None of the top guys. Zero chance, I think. Zero chance that they would get any of those guys. So they overpaid for a guy who's not quite as good as those guys next year, but he's a pretty good player when he's healthy. And you sign him for four, so I'm thinking you're hoping you get three good years out of him. To me, if I'm Charlotte, I don't know what else you can do. You guys tell me if I'm wrong, but that's how I saw it.
Well, so let me ask you this, DA, and I disagree. I didn't care for the move that much, but how good are they now?
Exactly. I think they are a marginal playoff team, and they would have been you could have been a marginal playoff team if you had signed, you know, three guys to fill that $30 million you're giving Hayward. You know what I mean? Like, so let's say they signed, I can't think of anybody off the top of my head, but you know, three okay players instead of one pretty good player, they'd be no different. So what's the point? What's the difference? You know? So I just don't think I think they're a marginal East playoff team, but that's, I don't know what else they can do. What else can they do to get, you know, even good players? It's very difficult.
I don't know. Maybe it's LaMelo Ball thing. Why they would think that a Westbrook deal is worse at his number for 3 years than this is at this mm-hmm. number for Hayward for 4 years. I just think Westbrook, as much as, you know, I've been at the front of the line of critiquing his style of play, I just think he's way better than Gordon Hayward is. Like, mm-hmm. he, and not just that, he's the kind of actual star, right? Like, he actually has proven to drive ratings, to sell tickets. Like, yeah. OKC has traditionally done well on TV. They do well on the road. Like, so even if you want to talk about the business and the sort of off-court stuff, I think he's better than Hayward. I don't know how you can watch Hayward's 3 years in Boston specifically after that injury and think that he could be the driving force of competent offense. Like, he himself will get you to competency. I'm somebody who was a huge fan of Gordon Hayward back in the Utah days. I just don't understand how this move makes that much sense. Like, I saw him opting out of $34 million and I was like, yo, maybe he thinks he could get a deal in the $80 million range. Like, that's crazy, right? Like, yeah. 4 years at $20 million per, and then he gets $40 million more than that. I don't know, man. His agent, woo. that dude is earning his check now.
Yeah, Mark Bartlestein is an absolute yes. master. We'll have to talk about the Plumlee contract later too. But
yes, please.
Now you're getting into the ones where I'm going, huh?
So this is my thought though on Charlotte. Why do you say, well, we're completely irrelevant, so let's get 5% more relevant? Like, you're multiplying by zero, basically, right? like you're so, and you said, yeah, this gets them to be a marginal playoff team. I may be a little lower on them than you. I think they're just, I mean, their defense is going to be absolutely atrocious. And, you know, maybe they could get up to kind of an average offense. But in terms of like the whole relevancy thing, you just got LaMelo Ball, who is this magic ball handler. You lucked out that this guy fell to you at three in the draft. So why not just build up slowly around him? You said, how are they going to get good players? There's this thing called the NBA draft, which since time immemorial has been yep. this thing that's a shiny object for bad teams. So why would you want to try and be, you know, the number 11 or number 10 seed in the Eastern Conference and take yourself out of the Cade Cunningham sweepstakes, for example? I know they've changed the lottery odds a little bit, but still, you know, you can guarantee yourself a top five, top six pick. This is an awesome draft. And ultimately, you're winning more games now to, you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face. And you're going to be worse 3-4 years from now when you've been paying Gordon Hayward $40 million rather than trying to maybe take on draft picks with bad money. I mean, if you compare their strategy to what Oklahoma City has done, everyone is like, Oklahoma City is doing this unbelievable job. They basically are doing the exact opposite of what Oklahoma City is doing because they just lack the commitment to actually develop players. I mean, they basically had one bad year and then they're like, all right, we got to go all in on a 30-year-old that they're basically paying $40 million a year after stretching Batum as well. That's the other part of this that that I thought was pretty rough.
$9 million per extra.
Yeah.
Right. Just if to that have happens, the right.
But we don't know. That's not set in stone that that's what's going to happen. There may still be other ways to deal and get Batum off. But you're right. Look, it's an overpay. I would just say, give me the mid-level teams that have consistently built and maintained good teams through the draft. It's very hard.
Yeah, it's because they give up. Hard. They give up too fast. Yeah. They get a year or two of pain, and it's like, oh, we got to short circuit the process. We got to jump right back to chasing the eighth seed again. I mean, if you look,
they did this with Nicholas Batum, though. That's my thing. Also, like, we already tried this.
At least that team won 48 games, right? You were you're at least keeping together a decent team. But like, okay, so yeah, this is my point. Right? You look at all the teams that have just been bad for probably the last 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. And the common thread with all of those is that they tried to rebuild, and then they short-circuited that rebuilding process. The Detroit Pistons
for 20 years,
right? The Detroit Pistons did that. The Phoenix Suns did that. The Kings have done that approximately 47 times, where they'll just yo-yo back and forth from 25 wins to 38 wins, and then, oh, new management comes in, we got a mandate to rebuild, and then, oh, no, we got it. Vivek says we got to go back. Charlotte is another one. All of the bad teams in the NBA, the teams that have stayed bad, that have been irrelevant for a decade or more, the common thread is they don't actually commit to the rebuild. I mean, the Knicks are like that, too. They don't actually commit to the rebuild for more than a season or two. And all of those teams have bad owners. Your local Washington team is kind of doing that right now, too. All these teams have bad owners who are like, we can't be irrelevant. We gotta make the playoffs. Ted Leonsis has to make the playoffs every year. If that's your goal, then you're putting a ceiling on your life as an eighth seed, maybe. And then you have to rebuild again. And then you have to get right back up to the eighth seed. It's just a terrible cycle.
I would say you're probably right. And you're also probably not a billionaire who aren't known for their patience, who don't sign off. You know, the shining example on the city on a hill, the Philadelphia 76ers, that lasted about 3 years. And they said, nah, that's enough of that. That's enough of that.
Well, you know, but also, enough of that even after stuff. 3 years of that, right? Like, they really committed to that. I mean, they still have a 50-win team now because of what they did. Even after they've completely screwed up everything that Sam Hinkie left them, they still have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and they're going to be relevant for the next 5-6 years.
Right, right. And good for them, but that's, you know, you have to hit twice. You know, like, and the odds of hitting twice are not that good. They really aren't. If you go back and look, who's really hit multiple times? Oklahoma City. They drafted 3 MVPs. Show me somebody else who's come even close to that over the last 20 years, taking the, we're just going to build patiently through the draft and we're going to wait. We're not going to be under any pretenses. We're not in any hurry and all that sort of thing. One team in the last 25 years has consistently done it.
But my thing is I'm sort of in the middle of you and Nate, right? Like, I'm somebody who's like, look, I'm not the person that was shitting all over what Memphis was doing during grit and grind. But guess what? They got to 52, 53 wins. And they were like, we're going to make that happen as long as we can. That's not the same as 42. Right. It's just huge gulf between that. What Utah is committed to doing. What Indiana even has committed to doing. It's not the same as what Charlotte and Washington have committed themselves to.
No. How did Indiana get good? They traded for Victor Oladipo and Sabonis. They didn't draft them. They traded for them. you know what I mean?
But I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the Eastern Conference teams, DA. When they committed to those teams, they were up to 50-something wins. Let's financially strap ourselves to 40 wins.
It didn't come through the draft. The good team didn't come through the draft. It came through. They got lucky. Not lucky. They made a good trade that paid off. And credit to them, it paid off. Because I killed them when they traded Paul George for Oladipo and Sabonis. I thought it was a ridiculous low value.
Yeah.
And they were right, and I was wrong. They got a good team out of that. Memphis, hey, look, they drafted Conley. But what else did they do? They traded for Marc Gasol. Okay? They traded for him.
Yeah, but they were willing to acknowledge that it wasn't going to work out, that they weren't going to win a championship with Pau Gasol, and they were willing to move him. What did Charlotte not do? They did not trade Kemba Walker in similar circumstances because they were chasing the eighth seed.
And they should have. And the Wizards should have traded Bradley Beal. I'm on record as saying this. Last year, I agree with you on that. When it's time to trade him, you got to trade him. Yeah. I agree with you on that.
But they definitely should have gave John Wall a Supermax because I love John Wall. That's it, then.
All I'm saying is that in Charlotte's case, I don't think it's as easy as we're just going to build patiently through the draft in a football state. You know, we're fighting for every button, the seat that we can get. We're just going to wait 4 or 5 years until we hit on one or two of these guys that get us up to 50 wins. It's just hard in some markets to do that. OKC is a very small market. I think they have a little bit different story than a lot of other smaller markets, the Thunder.
Yeah, they have a good owner.
There's
not
a lot else going on in OKC right now from the pro standpoint. So, you know, they have a little bit more runway than a lot of franchises that need to be relevant, or if you want to say need to be winning as much as they can. I just think it's, I just think it's not as easy as some people make it out to be.
Oh, I
and
I
just
agree.
Say, well, they're stupid because they overpaid. There's reasons why those types of teams overpay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree with you that it's not easy because, I mean, that's why nobody is able to do it. But I think the teams that have good ownership are able to do it, right? Because I here's the difference, right? Like, I completely agree with you. Like, trying to rebuild through the draft, it really can take a long time. It really is scary. You don't know. I mean, that was the whole point of what Sam Hinkie said. Like, we need as many bites at the apple as we can get in the draft, because I'm acknowledging I can't determine who is the absolute best player. And hey, you know what? Like, yeah, they drafted Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. They also drafted Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor, right? Like, that's why you need to give yourself a number of chances. And the strategy is not guaranteed to work. I completely agree. And also, the more teams that pursue it, the less effective it can be. However, that strategy is not guaranteed to work. This strategy of, oh man, we can't be this bad in this market. We have to be relevant. We have to win 35 games. That strategy is nearly guaranteed to fail. So at least give yourself a chance, is my thought. Yeah. And there's a reason why all of these teams that we're talking about who have done this over and over again, there's a reason why we talk about Robert Sarver and regrettably Michael Jordan and James Dolan and Glenn Taylor as the worst owners in basketball, because they don't have the commitment and vision to look beyond 1 year. We got to be relevant in this market in a football state. I completely understand why they do it, but if you want to actually be a good team and win 50 games for multiple seasons, which I think should be the goal for any team, it's not going to get you there.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah. It's not the goal for every team, by the way.
Yeah. Well, and
that's another problem.
Let's get that straight.
That's another conversation for another day.
Let's bring DA into the conversation here.
Welcome to Hoops.
Comma is
adjacent on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Turned it on and I heard Shaq with the barbs and like the Boston and Braggadocio. I was transported right back into it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I think I rap better than Shaq.
David Aldridge.
Oh, he's totally playing him. Yes. And then he kept their lungs out in front of everybody on TV.
Michael was not your friend.
It was popping in there.
Rodney Lambert.
So the Chicago and Detroit stuff, that was real.
That was real.
I mean, God forbid we don't have scholarship monies and can't pay for the charters for the water polo in Iowa.
Hoops adjacent.
Welcome to Hoops.
5, 4, we have ignition.
I want to talk about just kind of a general view of who you think has had, you know, the two or three teams with really done well in terms of their offseason free agent moves, and two or three that have struggled. I mean, I must be honest with you, I can't find a lot of A's if you're giving out grades.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking around, and
some
most teams
would say Portland.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. What they did was fine. I have no problem with what they did. I think they
like
got
Portland
better defensively.
Yeah.
I like those moves. I like, you know, I think Covington's really going to help them. You know, I don't mind what they did. It was good. It was good. But I'm not blown away by much of what anybody has done. I guess with the possible exception of Atlanta, if they wind up with Bogdanovich, you know, as we're taping this, we don't have final word on whether Sacramento is going to match the offer sheet. I do like what Atlanta's done, but are there other teams that you really like?
I mean, we looked at this free agent market, and everyone said for years and years that it wasn't that great of a free agent market. So it probably isn't a surprise that nobody has really been able to do anything earth-shaking. The Bucks obviously blowing it with Bogdanovich in whatever form or fashion that took, and maybe we'll never know exactly what happened.
That's a 30
there. I'm
for
sure.
30 right there. Boy.
Yeah.
I think we already know, Nate.
What happened? What happened then? Tell me.
I don't think we could do it on this particular program, but I think we have an idea about what happened there.
I've heard several theories, any of which seem rather plausible to me, but mm-hmm. and I've repeated all of them on my show. I don't know which one it is, but so if they'd gotten Bogdanovich, then I think maybe you could say them. Other than I think Dallas subtly has had a better offseason given the constraints they had.
Wings. Yep.
Yeah.
They did not want to take on money for 2021. They want to be in the Giannis sweepstakes. And so we'll see if Giannis signs his Supermax or not. It doesn't look like it's trending that way. But if he does, then obviously it would be Miami. Milwaukee. Particularly because he also, by waiting to sign, he also would have induced Miami and Toronto, two competitors for Milwaukee, to do less this year.
Which would actually
be some solid, like, four-dimensional chess there. Portland, Dallas, if Klay Thompson hadn't torn his Achilles, you would say Golden State looks a lot better. But and I think they're actually going to be a little better than people think. They have a lot of depth on this team.
They did a pretty good salvage considering, you know, you can't replace Klay Thompson, right? But I thought that was a pretty good salvage. I mean, I think they'll have to play different, right? But Oubre, I think Oubre's going to help them. I really do. I think Kelly is what a kind of player that they haven't had since Iguodala left and since Livingston retired. I think Wanamaker's pretty good. I like what they did.
And I got to say about the Dallas, Toronto, Miami triumvirate, when or if Giannis eventually plays out the season and doesn't sign the extension and puts himself in position for free agency, and those guys set themselves up to be, you know, at the table when he ultimately decides what team he's going to choose. And they didn't make their teams materially worse this year. Obviously, I don't think any of them got much better this offseason, but they haven't gotten worse by that much, depending on how you feel about, I guess, Derek Jones and, you know, the boss man or whatever we're calling them. Whatever we're calling Crowder these days. So I judge their off seasons pretty favorably based on that.
I thought they did okay. I don't think they were awful. You know what I mean? I thought a lot of teams were B's. I thought they were B's. Maybe you're right, Nate. I mean, it might have just been that's what was available this year. I saw what you had said about the Knicks in free agency, and I completely agree with you. Very odd it's very odd if you're building around this kid that you're surrounding him with guys that all have to have the ball and aren't really great shooters. You know, it's just that it seems odd to me. What are we missing? Or what are we missing on that?
Are we talking about the Knicks now? Because I just got distracted by the news that just broke.
Yes, the Knicks, yeah.
The news just broke that the Heat are indeed going to extend Bam Adebayo.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. I heard that was a likelihood that they were going to give him, if not the max, close to the max.
Well, so that definitely limits – well, let's see. So they're looking at probably about $29 million in space now for next year. Maybe they give him a little bit less than the max to get to 33. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe it might not quite be the max. It'll be close.
Okay. Yeah. So.
But if Giannis decided he wanted to come, I think that the brain trust over there could figure out how to maneuver in such a way that they could create the extra space, right? Like, they've been wizards with the cap in the past. So I wouldn't be shocked that they figured it out if that, you know, ended up being the case. But maybe they got word back from Greece that Giannis is going back.
That's why I thought that was like a somewhat of a pregnant move here that might indicate, because Bam and Giannis have the same agent as well.
Correct. That's true. Yes, that's true. That is true. But I had heard that a few days ago that was what was likely to happen with Adebayo. So I don't know if they have, like you said, they may have word already on what they think Giannis is going to do next year. And this is what I The Heat always seem to know, don't they? They just always seem to have the intel that other teams can't seem to figure out. Yeah, you know, it is amazing.
They always seem to know that Anthony Carter's agent is just going to make a paperwork error, right? They just somehow they have the foresight to believe that that's going to happen.
You mentioned Toronto, and I really do like what the Raptors did. I Van Vliet is the big move up, clearly there. But, you know, I think Baines is a low-key good pickup for them. You know, if you lose Ibaka, it's hard to replace. But I thought Baines was a good pickup for them. What did you think of what they did?
I think as far as recovering, Ibaka put them in a little bit of a bind, as did Gasol, by waiting as long as they did, much as Kawhi did last year. But they got the best center remaining on the market at that time in Baines, and they always seem to be okay, don't they? And Gasol, I think he was kind of running down as far as what he was going to be able to do in the playoffs for them. He struggled a little bit in that Boston series. I think they'll be okay. Again, they elected not to go more than 1 year with these contracts, and they did about the best they were going to do once Gasol and Ibaka decided to leave.
Yeah. So we're now at the point where I have no idea what's going to happen with Westbrook and with James Harden. I think they go into the season with both of them. I don't think the Wizards are going to do the trade for Wall. They don't want to attach draft picks to Wall's contract, which is what Houston's been holding out for. What do we make of what Houston could possibly be if they do start the season with those two guys and with the additions they made? Christian Wood's a good pickup. I think that'll, you know, he can help them. Where are we on Houston going forward with a rookie head coach, a rookie GM? It just seems like chaos, but on the court, could they be interesting?
Well, the first thing that came to mind for me when you asked that was that a certain reporter you may be acquainted with reported last week that Tillman Fertitta remains, I believe the quote was, hell-bent on getting out of the luxury tax. And they are in the luxury tax right now. And so if they want to get out, that means either Daniel House, PJ Tucker, or Eric Gordon are going to have to go if they don't move one of Westbrook or Harden. So there is a move coming here in theory, because they're going to be they're going to be pretty close to the apron. They probably got to shave off about $4 or $5 million to get out of the luxury tax if they're going to continue here. I'm not sure what this team looks like defensively. That's my big question. Christian Wood can't necessarily execute that swishing scheme that they've had in the past. James Harden is never going to get through a screen ever. So maybe they'll go back to the scheme they had where it was, we'll play conventional defense except for every screen involving James Harden. We'll only switch those. Like they tried that in 18-19 when they had Capella for a while. But I think their defense could be a problem. I think offensively, you know, Christian Wood might be an upgrade on what they got from Robert Covington last year. And then there's also still just the issues with Daniel House and the way he conducted himself in the bubble. And I think everyone there is pretty sick of him as a result of that. So that situation has to resolve. I mean, I think there'll be a playoff team, but not a particularly good one as currently constructed. And then Westbrook has to actually get back to the player that he was for 2 months around January last year, rather than the guy at the beginning or the end of last season.
Go ahead.
No, Nate, I wanted to ask you, because I'm kind of baffled by the idea that teams aren't just jumping in line to try to get in the James Harden sweepstakes, right? Like, to me, he's a better player than Paul George ever was, Jimmy Butler ever was. This is clearly an MVP candidate every single year. He's got two years left on his deal for sure. Why? Talk me out of Boston calling these people and saying, look, you can figure out which two of Smart, Brown, and Kemba you want. Couple of picks. Get James Harden in my building. He's the best player to come on the market since fucking AD. Like, why are teams banging down Houston's door for this dude?
I think there's a number of reasons for that. Number one is that Harden has said he wants to go to Brooklyn and only Brooklyn. So trading,
call his bluff.
Trading for him is not. Number two, Houston, obviously, I mean, they've seen these packages. They saw Paul George. They saw even, hey, Drew Holiday, who went for three first rounders and two pick swaps. And so I don't know that any team, if the guy doesn't want to be there, are you going to give up that kind of a crazy package? Yeah, if it turns into a Kawhi, last year of his contract, no one else is making an offer, we'll throw you a lotto-protected first rounder and a can you give us Danny Green too type of deal, then yeah, that's then I think we'd get more people in it. But Houston is they're willing to get uncomfortable, as it was said. And so and then also, where does James Harden go in the All-Star draft every year? You ever notice that?
Not first? Is that what you said?
Yes. So I don't think that other stars particularly want to play with him. Like if you're Jason Tatum, you know, you're kind of building this slightly Harden-esque game yourself. You've got Jaylen Brown. They had all these chemistry issues in 18-19. Harden has alienated basically every star that he's ever played with. And so James Harden doesn't fit a lot of places, right? If you really go through I think there's even questions about his fit in Brooklyn, frankly. But if you really go through the contenders, you know, who should – and particularly a contender – because the only reason that you are doing this move for James Harden at the current asking price is we think that we are – you know, one of the championship favorites if we get this guy. And, you know, Golden State would James Harden has a lot of baggage, right? Like, yeah, you could try to do Klay Thompson plus James Wiseman plus the Minnesota pick next year plus a bunch of future firsts to get James Harden. But Steph Curry doesn't want to play with James Harden. Golden State's fan base doesn't want James Harden. Right. Like there are so many teams you could come up with that for. So maybe that's underselling what James Harden could do. But I think there's also a feeling that he has been so optimized and enabled in Houston that there are questions about whether he would be the same player somewhere else.
Here's my thing, Nate, about Boston specifically. Right. I remember every single freaking NBA writer worth their salt just sucking these guys up and down the internet for having all these assets that they got from Brooklyn, right? And this is what they got. This team right here, which it's a nice team. I don't know that their upside is anything so special to write home about. What I definitely don't think their upside is better than Brooklyn, who they allegedly fleeced for those picks, right? Like, I don't understand why you see this team and you're just so in love and enamored of it. And again, you know, admittedly, I'm probably one of the people in the media who is least high on Jason Tatum. Like, I get why people like him. It looks nice when he makes step backs from 19 feet. But, like, functionally, I don't know that he's ever going to be at the upper echelon of NBA players. And so I look at this team and I'm like, why wouldn't I take a chance on James Harden and actually put myself in position to be a high upside team for once?
What is your package to get James Harden if you're the Celtics?
I'd put Tatum in there. that's just me.
Never. I feel somewhat similarly about you to on Tatum. I like him a little more, but it's never going to happen. And I don't think it should. Like,
well, it's never going to happen because as a GM, it doesn't make your job safer to do it, but it makes your team better.
Well, you've got five more years at minimum of Jason Tatum versus two for Harden. And also, here's another thing too. Like, James Harden is 31. Like, is he even?
Yeah, he is.
Is he even going to be a top 10 player next year?
For Boston. I don't know if I do it. You know what? No,
you don't think James Harden's a top 10 player next year?
He might not be. But when you consider his defense, is he a top 10 playoff player next year?
Well, that's a difference. That's a different argument. You know who I would? We talked about this team before. Charlotte. That's the kind of guy they should go get. you want to draw fans. You want to be relevant. You know, that sort of thing. You know, that third pick might have gotten you. Now, you might love LaMelo Ball. I want to see it. If I think there's some places where it would be a good fit. I'm not sure about Boston, though, Waz. I kind of agree.
It's not going to happen because that's never been their MO. It's better to be the team that's always on the verge of doing something that might actually matter. Like, this it's better
you,
for
this
you.
This is about you getting mad. You're tired of Ainge always saying, oh, we had 73
annoying,
trades ready to go.
It's annoying. And they're living off of this 08 championship 12 years later. Like, give me a break. I mean, they never do anything. These teams never freaking matter.
They've made the Eastern Conference Finals like what, three of the last 4 years?
Okay, they did that year where they lost to that crappy ass Cavs team. I guess we could give them
credit. They should have been in the NBA Finals last year. People picked them to beat Miami.
Why didn't they win, Nate? I think that says something about this team. They weren't overly injured. They were who they were supposed to be in that series, and they lost. Like, I don't understand what's so special about these guys. That's all I'm saying. Like, besides the fact that everybody thinks Danny Ainge is a fucking genius, which that's cool. Like, what? Like, do you see Boston and say, man, this is a damn team right here that's going to do something to people? Like, I don't think so. I wouldn't pick them against Brooklyn. I still wouldn't pick them against the Heat again. I don't know. And maybe I'm just down on their young guys, because I think out in the media, people love their young guys. I just never have.
I mean, you're talking about like 22 and 24-year-olds who are like the two best players on a team that's getting to the East Finals. Like, that's pretty good. Like, I mean, weren't we just talking about how winning 55 games every year is pretty good? And yeah, you know, maybe they should have pushed all their chips in at one point or another, although they did get Kyrie Irving and that didn't work out. I mean, I think when you consider the guys that they have lost over the years and to still be an Eastern Conference contender and to be making the East Finals every year, even with all these guys that they've lost, I think that's pretty good.
No, Nate, I'm not saying it's not pretty good. I would never say that. It's just for me, I feel like your goal should definitely be trying to maximize your potential at the top end when you're this close, right? Like, they are knocking on the door. How do they get to that next level? To like I don't know on any planet that you would put them in the same echelon as the Lakers as presently constructed.
Probably not, but that's okay. I mean, look, I think you could both be right on this. I hear what you're saying about their two guys, Waz. They haven't kind of dominated a playoffs yet, but they are young. They are learning still. The burn rate is substantial in terms of guys that have come through Boston and haven't gotten it to work for whatever reason. Oh, by the way, 5 years, $163 million for Bam.
All right, so that's the max.
According to Shams.
Yeah, that's the max. Although it probably, I think maybe where they argued about it was the escalators in terms of like making the Rose rule, because that would really, if he gets the 30% max by making an All-NBA team, that would maybe take them out of the Giannis sweepstakes. But yeah, man, the math is going to be real tight in Miami right now to get a max guy, because it's basically what you're stripping down to is basically Butler, Adebayo, cap holds for Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn, and Precious Achiuwa, and that's it. So here, you want to do some? We'll do some live math here, some live spreadsheet spreadsheet math. All right, and Duncan Robinson. Let's see. So. Yeah, so they're going to be – it's going to be right up against it. Like, they would not quite be able to offer Giannis the max. Maybe they would move on from Duncan Robinson as well. And then if they move on from him, yeah, they would just be able to offer Giannis the max. They also got $5 million of Ryan Anderson stretched on their books, which is not amazing. So that's it would be really tough. He would have to take a little bit less than the max. And hey, LeBron and D Wade and Chris Bosh did that back in 2010.
It's not like it hadn't happened before down there, right?
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, like, if guys really want to come there, and Giannis is actually literally taken less than the max himself in an extension to help out the Bucks before. Yeah, maybe this doesn't take them out of the sweepstakes. And I always wondered this, like, for NBA, you probably know this better than me, DA, but like, there's just something about like, oh, the max. It's like, you know, did these guys, is it really taking like $1 million less? Is that going to kill them?
No, but it's, I mean, the,
I think,
status.
Some people are, yeah, are just like, it's not about the number. I'm taking a dollar less than I could get because I'm that good.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
like, all right.
It's about the status of I got a max deal, you know.
Yeah, and Giannis doesn't need that. He's probably the least status obsessed guy among superstars in the NBA.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So, let's. I mean, well, we haven't talked about your favorite team, the Clippers. Waz, what do you think? I really like Ibaka. I think that's a great move for them.
Look, it was getting bleak down there
the Clipper fans are all losing their minds over what the first day, and it wasn't that bad. Really.
Well, but no, it's not just that. It's that Ibaka was linked to Brooklyn, the KD thing, all of that, yada, 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 which I thought was interesting because of the DeAndre Jordan situation, where clearly the two guys who seem to be the most influential over there are attached at the hip to DeAndre. So I didn't understand how the Serge Ibaka thing would work, but I think that was the chatter. And so people were worried for the Clippers, right? Like, Obviously Montrez left, Jermichael Green signed in Denver. And it's like, okay, so what are they going to fill these positional needs with? And, you know, they finally got the Ibaka deal. And I'm not going to lie, I was on record on this show last year, DA, saying that the Clippers should be on the phone with Toronto about Ibaka last year to shore up their big man rotation, just so he could be a guy who shores up your back line, but won't be clogging up the paint like your other big men already do. And so I loved the fit last year. I still like it right now. I'm somebody who's pretty bullish on the Clippers. I think they're going to be really freaking good again next year. Like, you know, there's sort of this perception because everybody killed them on the internet, Nate, that the Clippers sucked last year. And it's like, no, they were like really a really good team, a good point differential. Like when their highs last year were as high as anybody's highs. Obviously their lows were kind of embarrassing and they blew up a team. But like, I'm bullish on the Clippers. So obviously I love the move, you know, and I do want to say, like Nate, I was somebody who wanted to see them play five out more, right? For whatever reason, Doc was just opposed to going small and being an all offense, all the time unit and figuring it out on defense, being really switchable and leveraging the athleticism of some of your wings to help you on the back line. He just never wanted to do that last year. I think you'll probably see them do more of that this year, especially with Tyronn Lue, you know?
Yeah.
They got the best center on the market. And not only is it the best center, this isn't some post up schlub who's only going to be around the rim. Yep. He shoots the ball. He protects the rim. He can move his feet pretty well. I mean, basically, pretty much everything you could hope for, except the one thing he doesn't improve is they're not a great passing team. But, you know, this is kind of my takeaway to wrap things up here. You know, we were talking earlier about how, all right, which of these off seasons really wowed you? And I think, you know, the Lakers and Clippers both did some pretty good things. But I think it's really going to just come down to, again, which team's stars play the best, right? I think most of these teams have put themselves in position to where, all right, if LeBron and AD are better than Kawhi and Paul George, the Lakers are going to beat the Clippers, or vice versa, right? So I think it's really going to come down to the stars this year more than it is some of these supporting pieces.
Yeah. No, this is definitely, you know, the Brian Dennehy type of free agency for the great supporting cast, you know, it's not the star. We call this Brian Dennehy free agency. It's all certainly about next year. I'll be very curious to see what Houston does. I think they'll move PJ Tucker because he doesn't want to be there anymore. And it's easy to do. Oh, let's do this before we let you go, Nate. I really like Troy Weaver as a guy.
Oh, I was going to ask you about this. Yeah.
I'm not sure what they're doing up there. I'm just not sure. I'm not saying it's all bad. I don't think it's easy to pile on and say they have 100 centers. I know that, but I'm not.
Well, they're down to 99 sure after the Tony Bradley trade.
Right. So you tell me, what do you see?
So the Jeremy Grant thing, you know, paying him $20 million a year, that one didn't make that much sense to me. Again, I think this was a team that had signaled they were rebuilding. They had the $30 million in cap space. You just drafted Killian Hayes as a point guard. Blake Griffin is kind of on his last legs, and I think they needed to commit to a rebuild and it signaled they are going that way, and then their moves really went away from that. I mean, I think the Grant one, he's still 26. That to me is defensible, but what killed me was they could have done that and retained Christian Wood at basically the same amount that he got, another young center, 24 years old.
It's not right. Yeah. It's not like he got $80 million, right? Yeah. You know what I mean?
So if you just retain Christian Wood, you sign Jeremy Grant, you get more athletic, and that's your offseason, your draft picks, you can kind of – you still got these younger guys you're developing. You're not going to be awful, but you can – and, hey, maybe if Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose work out this year, you could be in the mix a little bit, or maybe even then move those guys for some more value. Yeah. But basically what they ended up doing, though, was they stretched Dewayne Dedmon and Zaire Smith, who they ended up acquiring, so that they could bring in Plumlee. And that's the move that really that just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
That makes that's the one of everything that happened this week. That's the little one that I literally just am scratching my head going, why? Like, even if you like him as a player, I mean, but why?
Wait, hold on, DA. You don't think Denver's fourth and seventh or eighth best players are worth $30 million a year? That's crazy.
I can understand Jeremy Grant. Like, I like Jeremy Grant. I like him at 15, not at 20, but I can understand you say, hey, you know, this is a guy that's got some bounce to him. You know, he's played pretty well in the postseason the last couple of years. You know, okay, that's fine. You again, it's an overpay. Like, Hayward's an overpay, but again, who would they get, right? So, but the Plumlee one is just, I just have no words for that one. That just does not make any sense to me, given the alternatives that they had, and they already had in house, you know, like they already had those alternatives, you know? I just don't get that one at all.
30-year-old Mason Plumlee, when you throw in the stretch of Dedmon with $13 million guaranteed there, basically is getting the same contract that of Christian Wood.
Yeah.
Maybe Christian Wood, just like they're like, yeah, he's putting up stats that we just hate having him around. I mean, that's the only explanation I can come up with for them not wanting to retain him. You know, I haven't tried to run down exactly why it was that he ended up going to Houston instead, but that was very surprising.
You never know. Some guy might have said, I'm never coming back here. No matter what you offer me, I'm not coming back. So, that happens. It does happen.
Yeah,
you know,
we fall into that trap, right? Of like, oh, well, hey, they could have offered him $1 more and then he would have stayed. Like, yeah, people don't work that way.
Yeah, exactly. It is the Dunked On podcast, the great Nate Duncan. It is must listening. You must tune in. You find it everywhere. I'm sure that you find our podcast. So give us both 5-star reviews and make us both happy.
And don't cheap out either. Get that premium because Nate is giving y'all some good work. Don't cheap out. Get the premium account, y'all. It's well worth the money.
Exactly. Pay the man. Pay that man his money, as they said in Rounders. Nate, man, stay safe. Happy holidays to you. Happy holidays to you too, Waz. Hope you're able to spend some time with the family. Everybody stay safe. Wear a damn mask. Stay away from people that you love and people that you don't love, because it's not about you. Later.